Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 26th. Midland COVID crisis. We know that we are in unprecedented times when it comes to COVID in the community. Here is a look at the facts. Issues at the hospital. Midland Memorial Hospital, 122 total COVID inpatients Wednesday morning, breaking the record high. 88%, the percentage of inpatients now at the hospital who are unvaccinated. 60%, percentage of Midland County residents who remain unvaccinated. 30.3%, positivity rate at Midland Health's coronavirus testing centers this week. 26, number of COVID-related deaths in the county since July 4th. Issues within the school district. Midland ISD, 1,017 COVID cases, students and staff so far for this school year. 522, the number of active cases in the school district as of Tuesday. 300 to 400, the number of staff absences a day due to COVID. Midland Health CEO on having a record number of inpatients. Quote, "It's a very difficult situation. It's very hard on our staff. Our people are tired, as we said before. We had some hope, as recently as the first part of July, that we had essentially put the worst of this behind us. And with the hospital census low, we were getting on with our normal business. And here we are again, now back in a surge condition, which is in fact worse than what we thought was the worst we would ever see last year." Russell Myers.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday. Landgraf can get nuclear waste bill right this time. Stuart Doreen, editor, writes, "It was interesting to read that State Representative Brooks Landgraf of Odessa is again bringing a nuclear waste ban in front of the Texas House. The Texas Tribune and Dallas Morning News were among those reporting on the issue this week, and it, of course, involves Andrews County, where the Texas Tribune noted, "Waste control specialists have been disposing of the nation's low-level nuclear waste, including tools, building materials, and protective clothing exposed to radioactivity, for a decade. The company, with a partner, is pursuing a Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission license to store spent nuclear fuel on a site adjacent to its existing facility," the article noted. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission released its final environmental impact statement in July for a proposed nuclear waste site in Andrews County, and with it, NRC staff recommended that the commission grant a license to the company seeking to store high-level nuclear waste. The license still needs review by the federal commissioners. "It goes without saying that it is hard to find anyone around the Permian Basin that wants the waste." The Reporter Telegram reported in mid-July that Andrews County commissioners passed a resolution opposing high-level nuclear waste in county. Oil companies, business organizations, and Republicans and Democrats alike have stated their opposition to the storage of high-level nuclear waste. Landgraf attempted to bring legislation before the House during regular session, but the bill that Texas Republican Party labeled as a bad bill fortunately died. The bill was criticized correctly for reductions in taxes and fees for waste control specialists, among other items. Is Landgraf's Nuclear Waste Bill 2.0 any better? On the surface, it appears to be. Could it be improved? Definitely. Here's an example. The bill states a person may not transport or arrange for the transportation of high-level radioactive waste on the highways or railways in this state. The fix here is to redefine person to include those organizations, corporations, LLC, etc., included in the Business Organizations Code. The correct definition is improper and doesn't apply to any of the entities who would violate the statute. Other fixes include a high-level waste spent nuclear fuel and reactor-related, greater than Class C waste in the ban. Prohibit the TCEQ from ever granting a permit for construction, not just for applications submitted after the effective date, passage of the legislation. Add penalties and fines for enforcement and deterrence of potential violations. Call for a constitutional amendment to put a high-level nuclear waste ban on the ballot. Texans would overwhelmingly support it, and it would complicate attempts to get permits for TECQ. Governor Greg Abbott put radioactive waste on the second special session agenda, specifically calling for legislation reforming the laws governing radioactive waste to protect the safety of Texans, including by further limiting the ability to store and transport high-level radioactive materials in this state. The Republican governor needs to tell Landgraf and other state leaders to put these fixes in and give what is otherwise a watered-down bill needed specificity and teeth. It makes the bill about more than well-intentioned symbolism. One more thing. Representative Landgraf, this really isn't just your bill, and it doesn't just affect the residents of Andrews County. It affects all of us in the Permian Basin. Also, changes made aren't going to create regulation that provide protections for a region. Landgraf's performance over the past couple legislative sessions hasn't warranted rave reviews, which is concerning to me. While he doesn't represent Midland, residents of Midland County need the person representing Odessa, Ector County, and the surrounding area operating in lockstep with what is best for the region. Sometimes it is difficult to see if that is what is happening with Landgraf. It would be easy to go into more detail about the past, but the goal really is to look forward and take care of this nuclear waste bill. It's time to get it right. COVID Notebook. Testing available at West Campus by Stuart Doreen. COVID testing is taking place at from 1 to 3:55 p.m. at F. Marie Hall Outpatient Center, West Campus. They're doing as many as 72 cases, tests, a day now, which is a significant improvement over what we had been doing previously, Dr. Larry Wilson said. MISD coronavirus cases eclipse 1,000 by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD Superintendent Angelica Ramsey said there have been more than 1,000 students and staff test positive for COVID since the beginning of the school year. Ramsey said the numbers as of Wednesday morning were 1,017 cases, 552 which were currently active. That makes this period the most impactful on the district during the pandemic, she added. Ramsey said that the district is seeing an average of 300 to 400 absent staff members a day, which creates challenges for face-to-face learning because of the lack of willing substitutes and a smaller district support center, formerly the central office. Staff members also can include bus drivers, janitors, and nutritional support, she said. Ramsey said there is resistance with some substitutes that are older, specifically the retired teachers, and those fearful about coming into the schools because of a lack of universal mask wearing. Ramsey also credited the teachers that she said are working hard, calling the teaching staff amazing. So, the prevalence of COVID-19 in our schools and our community is challenging our ability to continue to operate our schools safely, Ramsey said. So, we continue to ask everyone to please send their children to school wearing a mask. She added that conversations continue among MISD and campus leaders about other mitigation efforts and other solutions to the COVID crisis. She said district leaders don't want to be forced to make the difficult decision of closing a campus because the district is unable to keep staff healthy. As far as solutions like Paris ISD's decision to make the mask part of the dress code, she said district leaders are talking about possibilities with legal counsel. Ramsey appreciates the support that the district has received from the community, and if more want to reach out to campuses, there may be specific opportunities for volunteers. Working together as a community is the only way we're going to beat this Delta variant, she said. Midland Memorial Hospital, Lack of Vaccination Drives Spike, by Stuart Doreen. The COVID-19 impact on Midland Memorial Hospital has never been greater. The hospital announced Wednesday that the number of inpatients reached 122 on Wednesday, one higher than announced at the morning press conference. The total was an increase of 7 compared to Tuesday and higher than the previous record, 116 from late 2020. As has been the case during the most recent spike in cases, a vast majority of those COVID inpatients are unvaccinated. Midland health officials reported 88% of the COVID patients were unvaccinated again Wednesday. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers stated the percent of COVID patients in MMH that have been unvaccinated has been between 88 and 92% during recent weeks. Other statistics that Myers talked about included 20 of those inpatients are on ventilators. COVID inpatients also make up 51% of the 239 total inpatients inside the hospital. 60% of Midland County residents remain unvaccinated. The positivity rate at Midland Health testing centers remains above 30%. The number of COVID-19-related deaths since July 4th has reached 26, including 20 in August. Midland Health's website also shows 15% of the COVID patients inside Midland Memorial are people from outside Midland County. 50.6% of the MMH's total census are COVID patients, and 91.9% of the 260 patient rooms are full. It's a very difficult situation. It's very hard on our staff, Meyer said. Our people are tired, as we've said before. We had some hope, as recently as the first part of July, that we had essentially put the worst of this behind us. And with the hospital census low, we were getting on with our normal business. And here we are again, now back in a surge condition, which is in fact worse than what we thought was the worst we would ever see last year. Meyer said Midland Memorial staff is getting creative in finding more room for patients, and that if Midland Health is able to get more staff, travelers or through FEMA, then there are another 36 beds available. Will it get worse? The Midland Health Department continues to play catch-up, reporting preliminary numbers this month. On Wednesday, new preliminary cases for August 17th through 18th were presented, 278 on August 17 and 166 for August 18th. That brought the total for 4 days, August 15th through the 18th, to 909. Dr. Larry Wilson, Midland Health's chief medical officer, stated that the rise in new cases has and will continue to translate into more patients to local hospitals. Wilson also said that there have been 170 breakthrough cases throughout the time Midland Health has been vaccinating. I did a little math around this, Wilson said, and since we began vaccinating, there's been about 8,000 new positive cases documented through the health department. If you consider the 40% of the population is vaccinated, you would anticipate if everybody was equal that there'd be over 3,000 positive cases amongst the vaccinated compared to the 60% unvaccinated in the community. We aren't seeing that. We see 170 positive cases among the vaccinated population a clear reflection on the benefit of the vaccination over being unvaccinated. For me, the fundamental thing that can stop this current trend is vaccination, Wilson added. Vaccination is the most important thing any of us can do. It is fully approved, it's fully free, it's fully safe. Vaccine, please, if you get the opportunity to do so.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, August 26th. Bernard Barney Seidenberger, Jr. Bernard Barney Seidenberger, Jr., age 77, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, August 24th. Rosary will be held on Thursday, August 26th at 7 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held on Friday, August 27th at 1 p.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church in Midland. Barney was born on June 4, 1944, to Ella and Bernard Robert Seidenberger in Greenville, Texas. Barney is survived by his wife, Dorothea Logan of Midland, son Robbie and fiancée B. Ruth of Midland, son Mark and wife Tammy of Flower Mound, son Phil and wife Angie of Amarillo, stepchildren Loris Fink and wife Valerie of Indiana, Tanya Childs and husband Jason of Austin, and Stephen Finos and wife Ramona of Austin, as well as seven grandchildren and seven step-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his first wife, Carla Seidenberger, his parents, Bernard and Ella Seidenberger, sisters Dolores and Agnes Seidenberger. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to Helping Hands of Midland, 1301 Brinson Lane, Midland, Texas, 79703. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Maria Carrasco, age 62, of Midland, passed away on August 24th. Viewing will be from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, August 28th, and from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday, August 29th, at the branch at NPW. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Sunday, August 29th, at the branch at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, August 30th, at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are under Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Maria Guadalupe Barrientos, age 91 of Midland, passed away Sunday, August 22nd. Viewing will be Wednesday, August 25th, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary being recited at 7 p.m. Wednesday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Thursday, August 26th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. She is survived by her two sons, Ricardo Barrientos and Pablo Barrientos, one daughter, Luz Sherrod, and numerous grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Thursday, August 26th. City events to proceed despite COVID concerns by Federico Martinez. The Odessa City Council on Tuesday agreed to allow numerous upcoming city-sponsored community events to proceed despite an alarming surge in local COVID-19 cases during the past month. Council did not vote on the issue, but instead verbally directed City Manager Michael Marrero to not cancel popular annual community events such as Oktoberfest, the Fall Festival, and Parade of Lights. I think we need to leave it up to the citizens, Councilman Steve Thompson said during discussion of the issue. These are all outside events. Everyone understands the risks. They know safety protocols. Mayor Javier Hoven said he has contacted numerous surrounding communities and none of them indicated they will be canceling any events due to COVID. I believe the community is taking this seriously, Hoven said. We can always revisit this if things change. Councilwoman Mary Willis said she could not yet endorse the other council member's decision. We need to move very cautiously, Willis said. We still need to be vigilant. Willis suggested that vaccination booths be set up at the events, a plan Hoven and other council members agreed to. Council's decision to not cancel any events came minutes after Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin and City Fire Rescue Assistant Chief Rod Huber warned that the city must continue to aggressively combat the growing tide of COVID cases throughout the county. Tippin told council that this past Saturday, MCH surpassed its previous record of 103 hospitalized COVID patients. The good news is that number had dropped to 89 patients as of Tuesday evening. It's the first time in a month that we've seen a significant drop, Tippin said. We want to see that number continue to curve. Following Tuesday's council meeting, Tippin said he understood council's desire to proceed with community events, but he warned that decision could be a mistake. We all want to put this behind us, Tippin said, but we all need to take this seriously if we're going to defeat this. A public hearing on the city's proposed 2021-22 operating budget was held Tuesday with no citizens asking to comment. Council will formally vote to adopt the proposed budget of $239,327,076 during their September 14th meeting. The budget includes giving all full-time city staff a 4% cost of living pay increase for 2021-22. Marrero previously noted that due to COVID-19 and financial unpredictability the pandemic posed, no raises were given in 2020. Normally, employees receive an annual 3% raise. Council also voted to approve $1,182,078 for general operations of the Emergency Communication District of Ector County. The Emergency Communication District of Ector County provides 911 telephone and dispatch services for the cities of Odessa and Goldsmith and Ector County. Odessa, Goldsmith, and the county must all approve the proposed budget. Council approved Odessa Development Corporation's proposed 2021-22 budget, which included projected total revenues of $7,904,068 and projected expenditures of $1,547,729. Council voted to support a request to authorize the nomination of Odessa Regional Medical Center as a Texas State Enterprise Zone, a designation that will allow the hospital to apply for state funds for their capital expenditure project. The designation will help ORMC acquire state funds that will help the hospital proceed with a $10 million capital improvement project to expand its facilities and services. Proposed improvements over the next 5 years include spending $7.5 million for building expansion renovation projects dedicated to women and maternity care. A letter sent to the city by William Stokes, Steward Healthcare's Senior Vice President of Tax, recently detailed. Council voted to accept an invitation to participate in the formation of a joint task force committee to address redistricting issues following the 2020 U.S. Census, according to the council's work session agenda. The joint committee will include representatives from the city, Ector County Independent School District, Ector County Hospital District, Odessa Junior College District, and Ector County. City Manager Michael Marrero and Councilwoman Denise Swanner will serve as the city's representatives. Council approved a recommendation to award a $2,351,000 bid to Cooper Construction for the rehabilitation of the city-owned building at 307 North Lee Street. The building will house community development, code enforcement, and the fire marshal's office. The rehab, which includes a roof replacement and purchase of office furnishings, will be paid from 2019 Certificates of Obligation funds. New West Principal Wants Positive Year by Ruth Campbell. Nora Gonzalez is excited about the new year and her position, her new position as principal of Buddy West Elementary. "I'm hoping it's a positive year without COVID," Gonzalez said. "I'm just hoping that we have a normal year, as normal as possible." West is supposed to have 24 teachers and has 3 specialized units. Gonzalez was the assistant principal at Goliad Elementary for the past 2 years, as well as a bilingual and lead teacher at ECISD since 2009. The role models and mentors in her life inspired her to reach for the principalship. "I knew I wanted to be a teacher since I was a little girl, and I knew I wanted to be a bilingual teacher because I remember helping my mom fill out the applications because she didn't understand the English language. And I thought, when I grow up, I'm going to be a bilingual teacher. And now principal, I think. I always had leadership skills. I was lead teacher on my grade level for many years. I felt that it came naturally, helping people, helping them grow, helping them figure out something that they needed help on, helping them understand data. I always took the initiative," Rivera said. This quote describes Gonzalez. "A leader is one who knows the way, goes the way, and shows the way." Nora is a visionary leader. She knows it's going to be a challenge to execute her vision for the students, teachers, and community. But she is very persistent and will continue to motivate and empower others to meet the goal of success, Rivera said in an email. A first-generation college student, Gonzalez earned a bachelor's degree in multidisciplinary studies from University of Texas Permian Basin, and a master's in bilingual education, reading, and leadership. "I want to be in this principal role for a very long time. When I was interviewed for the position here at Buddy West, the hiring committee asked me, 'Where do you see yourself in 3-4 years? And I said, "I see myself here at Buddy West, growing with the teachers and helping the students grow along with this," Gonzalez said. Before COVID, the campus had about 700 students. In early August, it was at about 350 students in grades kindergarten through fifth. Gonzalez and her husband Jorge Holguin have 5 children, including 16-year-old twin boys and 2 grandchildren. Her children attended West Side schools, so she feels this side of town is her community. "One of her main goals as principal is to support teachers and to improve the campus rating and bring it up to an A. The state's accountability ratings range from A through F. I know that's going to take a lot of work, but it's possible. Anything's possible," Gonzalez said. She is the first educator in her family. Murie, masks needed during COVID surge. With 536 COVID-19 cases impacting students and staff and more than 1,000 individuals quarantined since the beginning of the year, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murie on Wednesday talked about the importance of doing something more to protect everyone. The ECISD Board of Trustees at 6 p.m. Thursday in the boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue, will consider a temporary mask requirement for students, staff, and visitors. The meeting is open to the public, but there will be executive session after the public comment period, and then the board will come out and discuss the resolution and vote in the open. If the board approves, the temporary mask requirement would take effect for staff on Friday, and for students and visitors on Monday, Murray said during a media call. COVID is having again a dramatic effect on our children, and one of the things we learned during the pandemic last year is the importance of having our children with us in a face-to-face environment during this time. As we look back and reflect upon last year, we see that children that were a part of our face-to-face learning environments had a much more effective experience. Learning for them was a bit more effective than those that engaged in our virtual environment last year, Murray said. We want to do everything in our power to make sure that every child has an opportunity to be physically present every single day in our classrooms. And our early numbers, because of COVID-19, indicate that many of our students and staff members are being forced to remain at home due to either getting COVID-19 or being quarantined due to exposure. We have to do more to prevent that within our own school system, and so tomorrow night, our Board of Trustees will consider a resolution that will allow us to take another step to ensure the safety of not only our students, but our staff members as well, Murray said. At this time, Murray said he does not anticipate any legal repercussions from the resolution. In seeking wisdom from our own local attorneys and the Texas Association of School Boards again at this time, we do not anticipate any legal repercussions, he said. OC tax rate likely to go up. The Odessa College Board of Trustees recommended a higher tax rate for 2021. The rate has not been adopted yet. Two public hearings will be held and the rate adopted in September. The total tax rate will be 0.201723 per $100 valuation. The current tax rate is 0.188965 per $100 valuation. Supplemental agenda material showed a public hearing will be held at 6 p.m. September 9th in room 128 of the Salisbury Campus Center. A second public hearing will be held at noon September 14th in room 128 of the Salisbury Campus Center. Adoption will be at the regular board meeting September 28th. Trustees approved a budget of $74,588,865 at their meeting earlier this month. This includes $53,223,726 in unrestricted funds and $21,365,139 in restricted funds. At its meeting Tuesday, the board also approved making Janice Hicks as Vice President of Institutional Effectiveness. She had been Associate Vice President for Institutional Effectiveness. The board congratulated Hicks with a standing ovation. She thanked everyone for believing in her and thanked her family for being on hand virtually for the announcement. Trustees also approved the execution of a tax abatement agreement with Nacero, Texas, 1 LLC, which plans to build a $6.5 to $7 billion natural gas processing and production facility at Panwell. The panel also approved an interlocal agreement for a joint task force committee of school district, hospital district, college district, county, and city. Board Chair Gary Johnson volunteered to serve, and President Gregory Williams will be on the panel as well. Hector County ISD will have board member Delma Abalos and Superintendent Scott Murray as representatives, said OC Attorney Daniel Harper. The law requires that after each census, governmental bodies review the census data and determine if they need to redraw boundary lines for their various election precincts. Cruz Castillo, president of JSA Architects, gave an overview of the OC master plan as part of a Vision 2030 Plus update. Some of the items in the plans are a new academic building, 200-car parking garage, a 1,200 to 1,300-seat performing arts center, a new student housing and dining hall, and a new administration building in the same place as the current structure, but elevated. Castillo said they are also looking at putting Odessa Collegiate Academy and OC Techs in the existing Health Sciences building. There will be dining and an open commons area, along with classrooms and other spaces to support the two schools. A pedestrian bridge also is in the plans, as is a track with turf in OC Blue and grandstands, and a dormitory of up to 3 stories, housing up to 190 students with additional parking. In his report, President Gregory Williams said 744 early college high school students have returned to campus. Odessa Collegiate Academy has a total of 383 students, while OC Techs has 361, he said. Williams said COVID-19 continues to be an issue. On August 10th, OC had 5 cases, and as of August 24th, they had 39 cases, an increase of 660%. He said a number of those had been through the early college high schools. "We're very mindful," Williams said. "We're paying attention to what's going on, and we're trying to stay on top of this situation as much as we can because we want everyone to be healthy. The success of our students will be limited if they are not healthy." In the spring, OC had a leadership retreat, and they formed an idea for OC Connections. The campus will rally behind one theme each week for the 16-week semester. This effort will help Odessa College employees and students stay connected about what is going on around the campus and how best to utilize the resources available to them at our college and our community, Williams said. He added that this will include Transfer Week, Positivity, Mental Health Week, Money Talks, diversity, and many other topics to support students. The college held registration rush August 14th through the 20th, and participants received orientation advice and swag. Ector County ISD had FAFSA night July 29th. Williams said 33 students joined to complete their financial aid applications, and 16 ECISD alumni walked away with OC scholarships for the fall semester. FAFSA stands for Free Application for Federal Student Aid. OC hosting Shot Clinic. Odessa College is hosting a free MCHS Pfizer vaccination clinic from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Saturday in the OC Amphitheater behind the Salisbury Campus Center. The clinic is open to the public and will be for your first dose of the vaccine. Photo ID required. No appointment necessary. Quick Hits, Movie Under the Stars. The Ellen Newell Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled the free screening of The Princess Bride, 1987, at the annual Movie Under the Stars, starting at 8:45 p.m. Friday. Drinks and snacks provided. Bring lawn chairs. Visit online newellartmuseum.org. OPD Citizens Police Academy. The Odessa Police Department is now accepting applications for the 27th session of the Odessa Police Department Citizens Police Academy. The 12-week academy will take place from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. each Thursday, starting September 2nd at OPD. There are no fees for the classes. The goal is to educate the public about the Odessa Police Department and to increase the rapport between citizens and police officers. The first 40 applications will be accepted for this session. The registration deadline is at 5 p.m. Friday, or until the session has been filled. Registration forms are available at the Odessa Police Department or online at www.odessapd.com. Forms may be submitted in person at OPD. Emailed to lpittman@odessa-tx.gov, or mail to the Odessa Police Department, attention Lydia Pittman, 205 North Grant Avenue, Odessa, Texas, 79761. Asbury United Methodist Church, 4001 East University Boulevard, has scheduled its 60th anniversary celebration during services at 11 a.m. Sunday. visit online asburyodessa.org. Rob Schneider is scheduled to perform live September 18th at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. Doors open at 6 p.m. The show starts at 7 p.m. All ages show. For tickets or more information, visit theactor.com. Odessa Fire Rescue recently received the highest level of accreditation for EMS in heart attacks. The American Heart Association presented Odessa Fire Rescue with the Mission Lifeline EMS Gold Plus Award for applying the most up-to-date evidence-based treatment guidelines to improve patient care and outcomes. Prince tribute scheduled for Friday. Acclaimed musician and entertainer Marshall Charloff will perform the Purple Piano, a solo tribute to Prince, at 7 p.m. Friday at the Ector Theater. Charloff, who played keyboards and bass guitar on the Prince album 94 East, has fronted a Prince tribute band, Purple Experience, since 2011. Charloff has performed nationwide, fronting world-class symphonies in most major cities throughout the U.S. and Canada. His resume includes playing keyboards for the 1970s rock band, the Atlanta Rhythm Section, and he recently collaborated with Prince's sister, Sharon Nelson, to co-write and record Colors. The Purple Piano will include Charloff performing Prince's biggest hits, including Purple Rain, Raspberry Beret, Little Red Corvette, Kiss, 1999, Let's Go Crazy, and Darling Nikki. A music icon, Prince died on April 21, 2016, at the age of 57. Sedaris returns to the Permian Basin. The Odessa Arts will be presenting an evening with David Sedaris at 7 p.m., October 28th at the Ector Theater. Sedaris is a person of numerous talents, from writing books to also being a humorist, comedian, and radio contributor for National Public Radio, NPR. He has seen many of his essays published over the years. With millions of copies sold, his books are often filled with autobiographical humor from his upbringing in the suburbs of North Carolina, Greek heritage, as well as his various jobs, education, and his life in Europe. If You Go, What? An Evening with David Sedaris. When? 7 p.m., October 28th. Where? The Ector Theater. Ticket prices, $16.95, student balcony, $28.25, rear orchestra, $56.50, orchestra section, $452, VIP, parental discretion advised. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Thursday. Molly Sue Adams Cothran of Odessa passed away on August 24th after a heroic 2.5-year battle with pancreatic cancer. Molly is survived by her beloved husband of 56 years, Ray Cothran, son Chad Cothran and his wife Jan of Dallas, son Jason and his wife Karen, a grandson and a granddaughter, brother Dale Adams and his wife Debbie of Watauga, Texas. Molly was preceded in death by her parents, John Edgar and Desi D. Adams, brother Gerald Adams, brother Robert Adams, sister Helen Colburn, sister Lolly Pierce, and sister Desi Goretzka. In lieu of sending flowers to the Cothrans, the family asks that you consider donating to West Texas Gifts of Hope, which provides sandwiches for patients going through chemotherapy treatments free of charge. Family and friends will gather to celebrate Molly's life from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, August 26th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. Friday, August 27th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Live streaming of the service will be available at www.npwelch.com. Lodvina Ludi Hinojos Marquez, 66, passed away on August 22nd in Grand Falls. She was born on December 20, 1954, to Angel Gonzalez and Otila Galindo Huerta in Mexico. Ludi is preceded in death by her parents and grandson Jaden Montoya. She is survived by her children, Jose Marquez and wife Diana Garcia, Homer Marquez and wife Sonia Wilkerson, Saul Marquez, Alfonso Marquez Jr., Fabiola Montoya and husband Ramon, Gennaro Marquez, grandchildren and 22 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, August 26th at Harkey Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, August 27th at the Monahans Event Center. Burial will follow at Tamarisk Cemetery in Grand Falls. Visit our website, harkey-funerals.com, to sign the guest book or leave a personal note for the family. Robert Carroll, R.C. Hutchison, was born in Lee County, Texas, to James Hutchison and Louise Thompson Hutchison on October 1, 1927. Reverend R.C. is preceded in death by his parents, L.C. Hutchison and Melvin Hutchison. He leaves behind to cherish wife Ann, daughter Maxine Hutchison Porter, Allen, sons James Hutchison and R.C. Hutchison, Jr., daughter Roshan Hutchison Stovall, sons Roderick Hutchison and Raymond Hutchison, and daughter Rosalind Hutchison. He also leaves grandchildren, nieces, nephews, as well as a host of family, friends, and loved ones. Visitation will be held from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. with a wake at 7 p.m. Thursday, August 26th, at Greater St. John Baptist Church in Odessa. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, August 27th, at Greater St. John Baptist Church in Odessa, with burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery, the Odessa II section. Services entrusted to Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory. Charlie Vasquez, Jr., 47, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 18th, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m., August 26th, at Crescent Park Baptist Church in Odessa. Burial to follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Kathy Jean Harris, 62, died Thursday, August 19th, in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Mary Patricia Pat Cave, 90, of Odessa, died Friday, August 20th, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Saturday, August 28th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. James Gerald Emiliano, 47, of Odessa, died Monday, August 23rd, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 10 a.m., August 28th, at Odessa Christian Faith Center. Pastor Don Kaywood is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Luis Botello Rodriguez, Jr., 44, of Odessa, died Thursday, August 19th, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., August 26th, at 2230 Sycamore Drive in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Hello, this is Cindy reading Health and Wellness from the MRT for Wednesday. Transcatheter aortic valve replacement possible. Mark Davis, MD, Permian Cardiology and Midland Health, writes, "Heart disease can be scary, but understanding the disease and treatments can help you get back to life. Midland Memorial Hospital offers many advanced treatment options. One of these treatment options is for those with heart valve disease. How would you know if you have heart valve disease? Common symptoms are fatigue, shortness of breath, chest pain or pressure, and dizziness or fainting episodes with exertion. The average patient is older than 70. If you are of any age and experiencing these symptoms, please seek medical care. When people get older, often the aortic valve of the heart calcifies and has difficulty opening. This is called aortic stenosis. When this valve has difficulty opening, blood backs up into the heart and the lungs and causes people to have chest pain, shortness of breath, dizziness, and fatigue. Many years ago, the only treatment was an aortic valve replacement by open-heart surgery. But over the past 10 years, we have developed techniques to replace the failing valve with a new valve by inserting a tube into the artery in the groin. Through this tube, we stick wires into the heart in order to put a new valve inside the failing valve. By doing so, the patient's symptoms are resolved. Instead of taking weeks to recover, patients are up and moving and leaving the hospital the next day. This procedure is called TAVR, transcatheter aortic valve replacement. The TAVR procedure had been performed for the last couple years in the Permian Basin. In Midland, this is done by myself. I am assisted by our cardiovascular surgeon, Dr. Kirit Patel. Dr. Adam Farber performs this procedure in Odessa. The patients we have treated so far in Midland and the surrounding area have had excellent results and now live longer and more fulfilling lives. OBGYN, Pregnant Women Need Vaccine, by Stuart Doreen. Dr. Ronica McBrayer has the message for pregnant women: get vaccinated. The obstetrician gynecologist is not saying to take a chance with a vaccine while carrying a child. In fact, she said that those infected with the Delta variant are taking their own chances. One patient came last week. At lunchtime on a Monday, McBrayer received a phone call that a patient was experiencing pain and bleeding preterm. Mom and doctor soon found out there were no fetal heart tones. "This is my first fetal death in a patient with active COVID," McBrayer told the press during a conference call on Thursday. She had been exposed at work the previous week, unvaccinated, and had been sick all weekend. "In the workup that we have done on this patient, the only thing I could find is that there was a large infection to the placenta, and in layman's terms, basically, the placenta clotted, and that's what we're seeing with this Delta variant. We're seeing a lot more vascular disease." McBrayer warned the community that the Delta variant is not the same COVID strain that plagued our community, the nation, and world in 2020. She stated few of her patients last year had an issue. Maybe a couple episodes when patients were intubated, but babies were still delivered. She said it wasn't this severe even earlier this month. One of her patients showed preeclampsia conditions, but she still delivered. A colleague had 4 patients in one weekend test positive for COVID. There weren't many problems. All those patients have done well and have since been discharged. But things changed. First, McBrayer experienced her first fetal death of the pandemic, and then blood clots to the lungs in another patient. That patient became unstable, hypoxic. What happens when there is a deficiency in the amount of oxygen reaching the tissues? Went through an emergency C-section, and on Thursday, she was still ventilated in critical condition. Now we also have another patient in labor and delivery, Thursday, with another pulmonary embolus. The baby she's carrying wasn't to 37 weeks. Yet another colleague's patient, McBrayer said, faces the same fate, including a likely premature delivery. All 3 of these women are unvaccinated, McBrayer said. "So that is why I'm here today. I want to talk to our community about vaccination." McBrayer mentions the endorsement of vaccines by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, American Academy of Pediatrics, and the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine. Midland Health later released the following joint statement from the expert groups. "As the leading organizations representing experts in maternal care and public health professionals that advocate and educate about vaccination, we strongly urge all pregnant individuals, along with recently pregnant, planning to become pregnant, lactating, and other eligible individuals to be vaccinated against COVID-19, the statement reads. Pregnant individuals are at increased risk of severe COVID-19 infection, including death. With cases rising as a result of the Delta variant, the best way for pregnant individuals to protect themselves against the potential harm from COVID-19 infection is to be vaccinated. McBrayer added, "These are a high-risk OB doctors. These are the people that I seek out when I need help taking care of my sickest patients, and they are all recommending, not just recommending, strongly recommending, the COVID vaccination. This is a safe vaccine. It is effective. This does not lead to miscarriage. It does not cross over and leave the deltoid muscle and go to the placenta. This does not increase poor outcomes in moms or babies." McBrayer commented about how her patients are not different than others out there now. "Everyone," she said, "is impacted by the people sending kids to childcare or school when they know they have COVID in their home. What is our logo? We are stronger together," McBrayer said. "It's going to take every one of us doing the work. So I encourage you to please go talk to your doctor if you have more questions about vaccination. I don't want you to live in fear. I want you to be empowered with the right tools and the right education." Key identified risks: preterm labor, preterm delivery, blood clots, preeclampsia, respiratory complications, hypoxia, pneumonia, need for intubation, stillbirth, and death. What is SWOT? Blood clot, a gelatinous mass of fibrin and blood cells formed by the coagulation of blood. Preeclampsia, a disorder that can occur during pregnancy or after childbirth, in which there is high blood pressure and other signs of organ injury. These signs include an abnormal amount of protein in the urine, a low number of platelets, abnormal kidney or liver function, pain over the upper abdomen, fluid in the lungs, or a severe headache or changes in vision. Hypoxia, a deficiency in the amount of oxygen reaching the tissues.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.